So I know I say this all the time, but sometimes I read a passage of scripture and I say to myself, I don't think I have anything to say about that. And I turn to what else the lectionary gives us. More often, though, I read it and then I talk about it with the Wednesday group and do some research and pray and read it a few more times, and there are sermons falling out of it. 8, 10, a dozen ways to take the passage that would be rich and fruitful and delicious and nutritious. And I just have to pick one. So that's what happened this week, and I picked one theme, so here we go. Some background first, either for your information or to refresh your memory. We're in the Gospel of John. When Jesus died and was raised, and his followers began to form themselves into churches, family-type groups, about the year 30 of the Common Era, they gathered to remember Jesus, their friend, to tell stories about him, and they go, remember the time he said... And they would do that over a meal, and they'd share bread and wine and other food because that's what he had asked them to do. One thing they didn't do was write things down. They knew all the stories, and they filled in for one another the ones they hadn't heard, and they believed that he was coming back again soon. He had said so, or some of their folks remembered him saying so. He was coming back because death couldn't hold him, and he was coming back soon. When, if you asked them, they would have gone like this, like any time. So, certainly, they didn't know when, but certainly they believed it was in their lifetime. Never crossed their minds that it wouldn't happen that way, that he would not return, at least not in the way that they had imagined, in bodily form, ushering in a new and peaceful world. It didn't cross their minds that there would be one day a second and then a third generation of them who had never known him in person, who didn't know any of the teachings and the stories, so they didn't have anything down. Why would you? And then, as they began to get older and some of those who had known Jesus in the flesh began to die, they thought, better wait this time. And they did. And some of those writings were called Gospels. There are lots of Gospels written. Of them, we have 4 in our Bible, Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John. Of those 4, Mark wrote first, a little after the year 70. How do we know that? Because the year 70 was the year that Rome marched into Jerusalem and destroyed it. We've talked about that before. It was a date to remember. It changed everything. Like, say, for my parents' generation, everything for them was either, was that before or after the war? That's how they, you know? And for another generation, it was before or after 9/11. Everybody knows where they were and how they heard about the Twin Towers and so on. So the year 70 was like that. It was horrible. It was a horrible experience, and people remembered. And Mark wrote just after that. Then Matthew and Luke, about 15 years after that. And then John after that. So John is the last written of the 4 Gospels we have. He's writing... We're at this point a generation and a half, maybe 2, separated from those who knew Jesus in the flesh. The original apostles are dead. Some of them were martyred because it got nasty. And the church is carrying on the best it can. And when you're living in a world of danger, when you're in danger for your faith, I mean, when it's not the expected or accepted thing to be part of a church, to give yourself to becoming a follower of Jesus, what do you do? What does that look like for those within the church and those considering becoming a part of it? What questions do you ask yourself before you become a part of a faith family, give yourself to becoming formed by a community like this in Jesus' name? I think, and how does the church grow under circumstances like that? How does it get its message out? I think this passage gives us clues. The author called John starts to tell us. Remember, he says, remember that day he called Simon and Andrew? Remember John the Baptist? Remember? And he tells his story. Here he starts with John the Baptizer, who has disciples of his own. And one day, John says, Jesus walked by, and the baptizer says, that's the Lamb of God who takes away the sin of the world. Two of John's disciples began to follow. I think in that case it just means follow him, as in go after him down the road out of curiosity. He notices them. He turns around and says, what are you looking for? And there it is. There's the question. And that's the part in the passage where it kind of screeches to a halt for me and feels like this passage is talking to me. What are you looking for? He asks, you know. When you come here, what are you looking for? It's a great question. What would you say? I've had a conversation recently with someone who has said, I'm not going to your church anymore. You're always on about politics. And said, that's not why I go to church. Okay? Fair? That's fair. Why do you go? I ask. What are you looking for? No answer yet. But it's a hard question to answer. I get that. And I hope that particular conversation will continue, because it's a good one. What are you looking for? Jesus asks. What's the need in you, the drive in you, the spilling over joy in you, or the pain in you that brings you here? What are you looking for? I'm sure I've told this story before. I'll tell it again because it's a good one in my opinion. The Alton Institute is an institute in the States that does research into matters of church and things. And they did a research project at one point where they were simply asking people, what are you looking for in a church? And they did a bunch of interviews. And Alice Mann, who is one of the researchers, tells this story. That one of the people that they interviewed was a recently retired CEO. I don't remember the details, but he had been like the CEO of some big company. And he was retired, and they said to him, what is it that you want in a church? And he said, I want a good structure and a 5-year plan and a longer plan than that for sustainability. Okay. And then the researcher said, but you, yourself, like, what do you want in a church? And he said, well, I'm looking for a place where my grandchildren can learn about the faith. Okay. And then one more time, she asked, but you yourself, what are you looking for? And he said, I just want a few people who care about me. And that's it, I think. I just want a few people who care about me. At the heart of it, I think that's what we all want. And you know what? We can do that. We can do that. We don't always, because we're humans, but we can do that. We can be for each other and for new people coming in to looking to make connections, for others who have always been here and getting to maybe different places in their lives that are difficult. We can be a place where we know and we feel that we're cared about, where you know my name, and where it's safe to be me. Safe to just be here and listen to the music if that's all you can manage on a particular Sunday. You know? Safe to sit there and cry if you need to do that. I'm on storytelling binge right now, but I'll tell you, when I first got here, there are three things that happened almost immediately that made me feel like I belong up. This was a good move. One was a board meeting, I'll tell you about it. But one was the first Sunday I was here. And the first Sunday I was here, I sat in the congregation and other people led the service. And there was a man in the congregation. He was a visitor. I didn't know that then because I didn't know who was who. And he cried through the whole thing. And I was noticing that, and I was making my plans for after the service. What was I going to do? Make sure he didn't just run out and without some kind of human contact and so on. By the time people knew who I was, and so they were shaking hands and so on. By the time I got through with that, he was in the upper room where three people were surrounding him, making sure he had coffee, giving him Kleenex, and talking with him about what was going on. The second example was, again, in the first several weeks, there was a group of people, I don't know if some of you will remember, sat right there. A group of people who would sit right there, cried through the whole service every time. One person in particular with a group who would sit with her and hand her Kleenex. And I didn't know then what that was about. I didn't need to. It wasn't my business. But I watched them from here. I watched them care for her. And I called that Kleenex Corner. And it was a beautiful thing. She felt free to cry, and they just let her. And everyone needs a place like that. And we can be a place like that. Or a place to ask the hard questions. Or a place to explore who you really are. Or a place to say, I don't think I believe that. And we can say, let's talk about it. We can be a place like that. And that's what so many people, Jesus says, what are you looking for? That's what so many people seem to need and want and crave today. Research tells us that technology, which is so wonderful. I had a Zoom meeting with Zadie yesterday. Like, how cool is that? Skype and Zoom and texting and emailing. We're in touch with one another the way we've never been before, and we're lonely. Soul-achingly lonely and isolated. And church, here's my commercial. It's not the only place, but it's pretty good. Church is a place where you go in person and think about things that matter, deep down things. A place to mix with other people you'd never likely mix with otherwise. It's not that we share something like a hobby, you know, that we're not a ski club where we all share that passion, or we're not age segregated, you know, you go to a group of seniors or something. It's not like that at all. We're different people from different walks of life, and the only thing we have in common is this crazy habit of getting up on Sunday morning to check in with other people and to tend to the state of our souls. We get together. We sing together. We admit that we're not perfect. We hear that we can start again. We hear that there's hope. And we join our resources, financial and otherwise, to do good things in the world. Pretty simple. And it's worked. It's brought meaning and life to people for centuries, or millennia. And I know that there's another side of that. I know all that. But this also is true. I've been reading a novel, A Simple Detective Story. The main character in it is an ex-cop who has been in the AA program for years. And he's interviewing someone who thinks he may have witnessed a murder. And he can see as the interview progresses that the guy has no information he needs, but he can also see that the man is an alcoholic. And here's an excerpt from the book. He's decided that the guy is not a good witness, and he's telling his wife about it, and he says, I don't see what he has for me. I told my wife. Maybe you have something for him, she said. Maybe I did. The way it works, he says, is remarkably simple. A day at a time, you don't drink. You go to meetings and you share your experience, strength, and hope with your fellow alcoholics, and you carry the message. And you do that not by preaching or spreading the gospel, but by telling your own story. What it used to be like, what happened, and what it's like now. And that's what you do when you're at a meeting, and that's what you do one-on-one. So I told my story. It seems to me that that's how the church grew. And that's what the Gospels are, in part at least. One author saying that knowing Jesus or knowing about him and the people who knew him, knowing that changed their life. And now they're telling us, so that we'll know, and possibly, if we choose, we can be part of that too, and maybe our life will change. And here's John, showing us one thing about how that worked that the other Gospels do not. He shows us Andrew. Andrew is one of the 12, but honestly, that guy never gets any press. Hardly a mention in the synoptics in Matthew, Mark, and Luke. But John has a soft spot for Andrew. It seems that Andrew's strength, what he did best, was simply what I've described. He just says to people, come and see. I know God. Come and see. Come and check this guy out, that's all. He changed my life. You never know, it might change yours too. And here in this chapter, he does it. It's Andrew who goes and gets his brother Simon, who turns out to be Peter the leader. But it's Andrew who brought him in the first place, going and getting his brother and saying, come, this guy, come and see. Later in chapter 6, you remember that time? Jesus has been teaching. There are 5,000 people on the hillside, and Jesus, it's getting supper time, and Jesus says to them, to his followers, give me something to eat. And they went, yeah. And it's Andrew who says, well, there's this kid here who has 5 loaves and 2 fish. That's Andrew. So we brought him to Jesus. That's Andrew. One other time, chapter 12, check it out. There's some Greeks. Some Greeks come to Jerusalem. And they say, sir, we want to see Jesus. And who is it who takes him? It's Andrew. It's Andrew. Simple. Just inviting people, just introducing them to Jesus, just saying, come and see. Over and over, it's been proven that that's the way churches grow, the way people are brought to faith. It's not necessarily by preaching. Preaching can sustain and inform and encourage, but to bring people in, it's not preaching that's going to do that. People respond to other people. If I say to someone, church is great, you should come, it first sounds like I'm blowing my own horn, right? And number two, people think, well, you're the minister, they pay to say that. If you say to someone, this is really helpful to me, or it's become part of my life, or works for me, or whatever it is you say, people take that far more seriously, just something to think about. So I see in this text, first a question. What are you looking for? All good counselors say that right off the bat, right? You go to a counselor, the first thing they're going to say is, tell me why you're here. What are you looking for? Makes you honest and invites you to go deep. So what are you looking for? I see that, and I see an invitation. An invitation saying, see, there's this guy, Jesus. And you can't see him in person now, but you can hear about him and meet him through his followers. And heads up, they're not perfect. And it's not a big thing, because to be identified with him sometimes gets you in trouble. But he said he was going to make the world brand new. And he's busy still in a mystical, mysterious way. He's busy doing that. You want to help? And he asks his friends to share bread and wine at a banqueting table in his memory. And he asks them to make room for the lowest and the least, and to live this way with arms wide, wide open. And he promises that this is the way to find real life. And the banquet, lucky for you, just happens to be prepared right now. It's meager fare for all that. A simple meal. But those are the best, aren't they? And he's here among us in it all. So you're welcome here. And there's a place at this table for you. So if you want, come and see.